Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star, then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Ms. Johnny Nazarian, Education Program Manager at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much, Bella. As mentioned, my name is Johnny Nazarian. I'm the Education Program Manager here at Cancer Care, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop titled Managing Eye and Vision Changes Related to Cancer Treatments. This activity is supported by the Eileen Roos Memorial Trust, and I would like to thank them for the support of today's program. Now, before we get started, I would just like to let you know how many people are on the call. We have over 200 participants, primarily from the United States, from rural, urban, suburban, and frontier communities. We also have a number of international participants from Canada, Ghana, the Philippines, and the United Kingdom, so it is a global call. We are delighted to have all of you on this program today and that you've chosen to spend this next hour with us. And now I'm going to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Miguel Maturin. And Dr. Maturin is System Head, Adult and Pediatric Ocular Oncology, Northwell Cancer Institute at Northwell Health. And Dr. Maturin will be discussing overview of common eye and vision changes related to cancer treatments, including causes and risk factors, as well as clinical trials, how research increases your treatment options. It is now my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Maturin.
Thank you so much, and good afternoon to everyone. I will be talking about the common changes that can be affected in cancer patients and the causes and risk factors and the clinical trial impact on cancer patients. First, I think we need to understand how cancer can affect eye or vision. The cancer can be primary in the eye, or can be a cancer that is somewhere else in the body and it's affecting or involving the eye. And third is the treatment. The treatment can affect whatever the cancer is in the eye or outside the eye, meaning metastasis, how that treatment can affect the eyes. So those are the three most common ways that the vision can be affected. When we come to cancer treatment, if the treatment if the tumor is in the eye, any treatment that we do can affect vision. If it's radiation, or if it's chemotherapy, immunotherapy, etc. But let's talk more. I think that most people in this call are more interested in systemic cancer and systemic treatment affecting the eye. There are different types of treatment. And when we talk about the eye symptoms or the eye problems, we need to understand that not every treatment can cause vision issues in the same way. Chemotherapy does one way, immunotherapy does a different way, radiation does a different way. But let's talk in general how patients will come to the consultation to the ocular oncologist or to the oncologist in general or the ophthalmology. I would say that the most common side effect from any cancer treatment is dry eye. Patients can complain of dryness, or patients can complain about even watery eyes. Patients can come with a blurry vision. Dry eyes can cause blurry vision when the patient or the treatment causes cataract, that can cause blurry vision or vision loss, etc. Those are probably the most common side effects. But then we can have side effects. That was the anterior part of the eye. It can go to the posterior part of the eye. And that can cause inflammation in cancer treatment because we are changing the immune system, can cause inflammation. And inflammation can cause what is called uveitis in the patient. that is also treatable. I would say that the most serious side effect that I personally have seen, it was a complete bilateral inflammation on both eyes. This is not very common, or bilateral retinal detachment causing in both eyes because of the systemic treatment. What I know Dr. Mar is going to talk more about treatment, but I will say starting from now is that the main reaction, the main medical reaction to these problems is communication between the oncologist and the ophthalmologist. And together they should decide what the treatment is and how to manage, because we are dealing with patients who depend on the cancer treatment to continue with their lives. So that's why the communication is very important. One important thing, and that I think I want everyone to be clear about this, is that the serious side effects from cancer treatment are they're not very common. There was a publication by Dr. Jenna Kim several years ago, and I think that continues to show the same percentage. It's about 1% of patients can have serious side effects from the cancer treatment. Let's talk about the next topic, which is the causes and the risk factors. The causes, I think that there was, I said that the immune system is affected by the treatment, and that's the way of the cause that can cause the side effects. What are the risk factors? Well, that is it's key. First of all, if the treatment is done to the head, or the treatment is involving the eyes, like radiation to the brain, that can predispose more common to side effects in the eye. Same if the patient has a history of diabetes, long-term diabetes, or if the patient has a history of other immune condition. Those are, I would say, the most common side effects. And I'm running out of time, so I will briefly make a comment about the impact of a clinical trial. And let me give you an example of how important it is. Number one, patients are living longer. And that's the consequence, that's the results from all the clinical trials, all the research, and leading to the FDA to approve medication that keep patients alive. That's how important is the research. It's a long way from the phase one, the first step of the research, until the FDA approves the medication. But we are seeing patients that in the past 15, 20 years ago, they would die within 3 months, now living years. And I think my time is up. So thank you, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Dr. Materan, for a wonderful presentation. I'm sure that there will be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much. Okay, and our next speaker is Dr. Brian Marr. And Dr. Marr is the John Wilson SBMD Professor of Ophthalmology, Columbia University Medical Center, New York Presbyterian/Columbia University Irving Medical Center. And Dr. Marr will be discussing tips to manage dry eyes, watery eyes, itching eyes, blepharitis, loss of eyelashes, changes in vision, cataracts, floaters, and flashing lights, as well as tips to manage low vision and how eye products can help you manage eyelash vision changes, and lastly, the role of the multidisciplinary team. It is now my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Marr.
Thank you, everyone, and thanks for joining us today. That's a big topic list to get through in 9 minutes, but I'm going to do my best. I'm going to start with the importance of the multidisciplinary team. So what is that? It's basically all the doctors that are involved in your care, leading from your oncologist, your primary medical doctor, your surgeons, your radiologists, and your ophthalmologists. And so this disciplinary team, if you're in a big institution, sometimes they have disease management teams or tumor care teams, or if you're not in a bigger institution and they have these primaries, it could be just you, your oncologist, and if your eyes are bothering you, your ophthalmologists. So it's important that everybody communicate. And as Dr. Matarin said, that's one of the key things to your success is to make sure everybody knows what you're experiencing and who's the best person to help you with your symptoms. Moving from that, as we said, you know, dry eye is a very common symptom amongst humans. So, you know, not only cancer treatment can make dry eye worse, but if you go to the drugstore, there's tons of different choices for dry eyes, and that stuff wouldn't be there if there wasn't a big market. So dry eyes is common. And the dryness or the surface of the eyes are very important for vision, for comfort, for how your eye behaves. So watery eyes may not be that your eyes have too much tears, but it may be a symptom that they're dry. So think of it as like you're in a room and there's a fire. What happens is the sprinkler system goes on to put out the fire. So your eyes are on fire, and that's why you have excess tearing to try to decrease that dryness. So if you say, oh, how can my eyes be dry, doctor? They're tearing all the time. It's because it's a reactionary tearing. So that's a clue to tell you that you probably need more baseline tearing. And that can be used with a bunch of different types of methods. One, if you just keep the eyelids clean, sometimes you can just use a little soap and water on your eyelashes to clean them, and that can prevent blepharitis, which is the inflammation of the glands and the lashes in the eyes, and that can cause the tear film or surface or dryness to be worse. So if you keep those in good health by just daily routine cleaning, some people use baby shampoo, some people just use bar soaps, some people can buy the expensive wipes that you can get at the store to clean the eyelashes. And that's a good way to manage blepharitis. In worst cases, you can take antibiotics like doxycycline to do that, but most of the time that's not required. For dryness, there's a bunch of different ways to treat dry eyes. One is you want to try to treat them before they're symptomatic. So if you're tearing or your eyes are burning, the drops that you use, the lubricant drops, usually are a little bit too late. You want to try to get the drops in before the damage occurs. And there's different over-the-counter drops from like artificial tears to artificial oils or gels. And that's a good place to start. So if you use your tears fairly regularly, depending on your environment, if it's dry outside, you want to use more drops. If it's really moist and humid, you probably don't need them as much. So be aware of your environment. But there's also prescription drops that you can get. Some are kind of, there's a couple different classes. Ones that kind of are kind of immunomodulators or anti-inflammatories. Those are like your Restasis, you see them, or Xiidra, you see them on TV advertised for dry eye. There's steroid drops that also decrease the inflammation in the eyes and can make them feel better. There's also different tear stimulating drops. So there's new medicines that will actually, like a nasal spray, that will make you tear more. There's also drops that will make the tears that you have in your eyes evaporate slower, so they stay in your eye, like Mibo and things like that can do that. And in really rare conditions, you can actually use your own blood to make eye drops for yourself to soothe really severe dry eyes. But the common theme and the things that you want to remember is to try to use any of these medications, you know, working your way from the simple over-the-counter stuff to, under the guidance of an ophthalmologist or a dry eye specialist, more of the medications, and use them before you're symptomatic to prevent those symptoms from happening. And that's kind of a good way to kind of stay on top of dry eyes. Know that it does cause visual symptoms, it does cause discomfort, and it is common with a lot of the medications or just stress that your body goes through during cancer treatment. So the next thing that I want to talk about is some visual changes. We talked about dry eye being one of them, but there's other things that can happen in the eye depending on what's going on. And Dr. Matarin did mention a few things that can affect both the front of the eye, the middle of the eye, and the back of the eye. The front of the eye is most commonly drugs that either affect the cornea or affect the tear film or dryness. The middle of the eye is cataract. So sometimes something simple as steroid use can accelerate normal cataract formation and cause the vision to be blurry. And that's okay because cataracts are usually reversible through a simple operation, and you know that can be timed if the vision is severely affected by that. And then there's more serious problems, like Dr. Matarin mentioned, about retinal problems, whether they be inflammatory or structural or bleeding and things like that. And those have to be talked with or pointed out to your care team and addressed by either retina specialists or ocular oncologists. And so those are kind of some of the common things to look at. And the other thing is low vision, how to manage low vision. So in different areas, there are low vision experts, special ophthalmologists that help people that have poor vision, and they instruct them in uses of aids, different tools to help use the vision that they have, or other technology that will help them cope with things that they can't see or need to see. There's devices that can use your phone and you can see how much money you have in your hand, or reading apps. So if you can look at the computer, it'll read the text to you, speak to text. All those things are much more available than they used to be, and low vision experts can help you go through that. So in that record time, I think we covered a lot of stuff. Sorry if I spoke fast, but I'll be able to answer questions at the end, and thank you for listening.
Thank you so much, Dr. Marr. Again, just another stellar presentation. Like you said, you covered a lot of information, so I'm sure that there will be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much again. And our next speaker is Dr. Lauren Yeager. And Dr. Yeager is Assistant Professor of Clinical Ophthalmology, Pediatric Ophthalmology and Strabismus, Edward S. Harkness Eye Institute at Columbia University Medical Center, and Dr. Yeager will be discussing guidelines for eye examinations and checkups, communicating with your healthcare team, quality of life concerns, and telehealth/telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepared list of questions, follow-up appointments, and discussion of open notes. It's now my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Yeager.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here. I'll start with guidelines for eye examinations and checkups. So it's important at the time of cancer diagnosis, when one is starting treatments, to see an ophthalmologist for a baseline eye exam. That provides us the opportunity to see where your visual acuity is, any underlying eye issues you may have. For example, Dr. Marr talked about how common dry eye is. It would be helpful to know so that we can start treatments early, to help mitigate symptoms early on from the dry eye. So it's good to touch base with your ophthalmologist. And like Dr. Marr mentioned, that might be a local ophthalmologist, or it might be part of your multidisciplinary care team at a larger medical center. But identifying an ophthalmologist up front is very useful. First, to obtain the exam, but also to have someone if you need someone during your cancer journey. Once you start treatment and are being cared for, you will likely see the ophthalmologist at a regular interval. And this really depends on your diagnosis, right? Whether you have cancer in the eye or around the eye versus whether it's somewhere else in the body, what treatment one is receiving. So if you're receiving treatments around the eye or around the face, you might be followed more regularly, and then various other factors. So depending on what's going on will determine how frequently you're going to be monitored. As Dr. Matarin mentioned, there are various treatment types, radiotherapy, chemotherapy, immunotherapy. All these treatment types can impact the vision in different ways. And it's important that when you see your ophthalmologist, you let them know what treatment you'll be receiving, including any medication names and what the treatment protocol would be. If a patient is having eye symptoms, then it's important to raise the concern to your ophthalmologist or to, you know, the primary care doctor, primary oncologist, so that they can contact the ophthalmologist. Then one can be seen for an urgent visit or an acute visit. If a patient is involved in a clinical trial, oftentimes the clinical trials will have times when the patient is expected to get an eye evaluation, and that will be built into the protocol. For example, a patient might need to see an ophthalmologist after every cycle. So moving on, what to expect in an eye visit for those who have never been to an ophthalmologist. It's often a long visit. It can last a couple hours. Patients will have their visual acuity checked. You'll receive dilation drops. These are eye drops that enlarge the pupil and allow the doctor to examine the front of the eye, but also the back of the eye or the retina. You may receive series of photographs or other imaging. We use a lot of technology and devices to evaluate the eyes, not only grossly where we take a look, but also on a cellular level or microscopic level, which is very helpful. And then before moving on from eye evaluations, I just want to say how important urgent evaluations are, or acute care, because if a cancer patient has any vision changes, it's important to communicate this and to come be seen and evaluated in a timely manner. Oftentimes, things can be treated early and with better results. So that leads me to the next topic, which is communicating with your healthcare team. And I really can't stress how important communication is. So whenever a patient notices new symptoms with the eyes, blurry vision, new onset pain, new flashes or floaters, it is important to raise these concerns either to the ophthalmologist that one has established care with, or to the primary care team so they can get in touch with an ophthalmologist. So rather than wait to your next scheduled visit, communication is key. Now, we've talked about communicating in kind of this acute setting, but let's also talk communicating in a planned setting. And that really starts at your initial visit. I would say it's important to come with information to the visit. So bringing what the diagnosis is, the stage of disease, again, the treatment regimens that a patient is on, so that the ophthalmologist can know what to look for, maybe what medications have higher risks of certain side effects, whether you have had any past eye history or any other eye diagnoses, a full list of medications and a full list of allergies. Bringing all these documents to your visit will be very useful. And then it's important as a patient to come prepared with your questions, right? Feel free to keep a journal, write down symptoms, write down questions, bring them to the visit. Things that patients often ask are what to expect vision-wise or eye symptom-wise. Patients ask what should they look out for, what are the red flags that may require an urgent visit. It's good to discuss for any eye drops that might be useful, like Dr. Marr mentioned. Maybe at your first ophthalmology visit, discuss what lubricating drops should be on hand if dry eye becomes an issue, or if itching eyes become an issue, what drop to get. And then to have a plan for that rare case of what if vision changes, right? What if you're experiencing vision changes prior to a planned visit? Who should you get in contact with? And when to consider going to, let's say, an emergency room or after hours for those very rare serious conditions. So I want to underscore the importance of communication. As ophthalmologists, we want to hear from you. We want to see you early. And we are working closely with your other physicians as a team. And so, you know, it's important. Communication is important, and a patient should feel comfortable reaching out. And then moving on, I think, you know, telehealth, I've been asked to talk about telehealth and telemedicine, and they can be useful with ophthalmology, I think more so in the setting of discussing history and discussing expectations. But when a patient is having eye issues, sometimes nothing can take the place of a in-person visit for an examination. So telehealth visits will be used probably very rarely in ophthalmology. Lastly, too, I think I have 1 minute left. It's important to talk about quality of life concerns. This is last but not least. Vision is a critical component of overall health. It is highly linked to quality of life. We are well aware that vision changes can impact one's mental health, can impact day-to-day activities, including mobility, reading, other routines of daily living. Patients may feel anxious about the thought of even having vision impacted, and we see that often in our eye cancer patients. So what to do for quality of life? Well, again, stressing that preventative care and routine follow-up is imperative, voicing that change in vision so we can attend to any issues. And there's lots of ways that we can help patients navigate this. So, right, if there's irritation and eye discomfort, there's drops such as lubricants and anti-inflammatory treatments we can use to help ease those symptoms. Sensitivity to light, we can help with different tints on eyeglasses. If there's decreased vision while reading, we can offer reading glasses or vision aids. We can refer for a low vision specialist. Like Dr. Marr mentioned, there's a really varied amount of technological devices these days we're very lucky to have. So let us support you in that journey and help you navigate the system. And I will leave it at that. I think I'm up with time, but thank you for letting me share. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Dr. Yeager, for that excellent presentation, especially really emphasizing the importance of communication with the healthcare team. And you provided a lot of tips for our audience as well, so I'm sure that there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much again. And our next speaker is Ms. Nikki Molfetis, and Ms. Molfetis is an oncology social worker and New Jersey program coordinator here at Cancer Care. And Ms. Molfetis will be discussing Cancer Care's free programs and services, as well as our Hopeline and website. It is now my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Molfetis.
Thank you so much. So just sharing a little bit about Cancer Care. Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization providing free professional support services and information to help people manage the emotional, practical, and financial challenges of cancer. Our comprehensive services include resource navigation, counseling, support groups, educational workshops like this today, publications, and limited financial assistance. There are many aspects of a cancer diagnosis that may be addressed throughout psychosocial supportive services, managing eye and vision changes related to cancer, making informed treatment decisions, quality of life concerns, clinical trials, communication with one's medical team are all important topics that can be discussed with an oncology social worker. Individuals who are managing eye and vision changes related to treatment may choose to supplement their existing social networks by choosing to join a support group or engaging in counseling services. Many hospitals, treatment centers, and nonprofit organizations offer supportive services. Being a member in a support group can offer the opportunity to connect with others who are going through a similar situation, obtain information, and provide support. Our online support groups take place on a password-protective website and are moderated by licensed oncology social workers who can offer further support and guidance. You can register for an online support group through our website at cancercare.org. We also offer resource navigation. This service is offered nationally to patients, post-treatment survivors, and caregivers affected by cancer. It's a short-term, strengths-based approach to case management where the social worker will work with the client in connecting them to resources, referrals, and financial assistance. Individuals may also experience practical and financial concerns throughout their treatment. Please note that if you are encountering these hardships, there are organizations out there to help you. As mentioned earlier, CancerCare offers resource navigation as well as limited financial assistance. If you are navigating any practical or financial concerns, I encourage you to call our National Hope Line at 1-800-813-4673 to speak with one of our oncology social workers. That phone number is also listed on our website as well at cancercare.org. We are here to offer you support throughout this experience and are looking forward to speaking with you soon. It's been such a pleasure being a part of this program. I'll pass it back to you, Ms. Nazarian. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Ms. Malfettis, for that incredibly comprehensive overview of all that we offer here at Cancer Care. Just incredible presentation. Thank you so much again. And now we're going to move on to the Q&A. We're going to try to take as many of your questions as possible, and I'm going to ask Bella to explain to you how to queue up for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
Thank you so much, Bella. Okay. So for our first question, you have one here for Ms. Malfettis. I have been my grandma's caregiver for quite some time and try to keep up with all the information regarding her diagnosis and treatment. What tips do you recommend on note-taking during appointments so we can try to get everything down after each visit?
Yeah, thank you so much. That's a great question. Good note-taking can definitely make a difference when juggling all of that information. I think we talked a little bit about it today, but going in with a plan, you know, beforehand, having some notes written down, questions written down, a symptoms journal. When you are in there taking notes, trying, easier said than done, but trying not to write everything word for word, trying to focus on key points, instructions, and anything that sounds like a decision or a change. You can also ask permission to record if the care team is comfortable with it. Recording the conversation on your phone can take pressure off note-taking, and you can always go back later to fill in the details. You also may want to bring a loved one or a friend with you. They can also be on the phone as well. One person may be able to focus more on the listening while the other one writes the information down. You can also clarify in the moment, asking questions if something, you know, if you didn't understand something, definitely asking them for plain language explanations. And then also just keeping everything in one place, whether that's a binder, a folder, digital app, storing notes, etc. Just keeping it all in one place can really go a long way. And lastly, I would just say be kind to yourself. I think whether you are the patient, caregiver, a loved one, whomever it may be, you're managing a lot, and it's okay if notes aren't perfect. So just being kind to yourself. Thanks.
No, thank you so much. Thank you for that answer. Okay, and our next question is for Dr. Marr. What can be done for floaters after treatment for breast cancer and on AI meds? Do aromatase inhibitors affect amount of floaters? Will amount of floaters decrease further out from treatment?
Sure. So floaters are basically pieces of material that are in the eye that cast shadows on the retina and are perceived as, you know, dark spots. And this can be caused by the vitreous shifting, which it does in most people normally during age, and sometimes during treatment, this can hasten that process and they can appear suddenly. What I tell most of my patients is that become friends with them. They're not going to go away, but they will be less noticeable with time, and that can take weeks to months to years. But basically, they're usually a benign process. Now, when they first occur, it's very important to get them checked because other things can produce floaters besides just vitreous detachments. And you can have bleeding in the eye. You can have metastatic disease in the eye. You can have retinal detachments. There's a host of different things that you want to make sure you don't have and that it's just a floater and that you will have to get used to them and become friends with them because they'll be around for a little bit.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Marr. The question here for Dr. Gager. I developed cataracts from being on steroids for 2 months weekly with Taxol. Can I get cataracts again? And then also, can I get them from being on a steroid nasal spray?
So, as you mentioned, steroids can bring on cataracts, right? So a cataract, for those who are not familiar, is when the lens of the eye, which is typically clear, becomes cloudy. And with age, everybody develops cataracts. But things like steroid use, usually systemic steroid use, but also topical eye steroids or maybe even nasal sprays, can quicken the onset of cataracts and make them worse. Now, if one develops cataracts and they are visually significant, so they are impacting vision and leading to decreased vision, they can be removed with a surgery. So they are treatable. It is a surgery that's done and the cataract is removed, and typically an artificial lens that's clear is placed in the eye. And once you have a cataract, you do not get it again because the natural lens is gone and that artificial lens is there. So it is a one-time surgery.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Yeager, for that answer. So here's a question for Dr. Materin. Can being an adult survivor of childhood ALL impact the risk of developing cataracts or other vision problems?
Sorry, you were breaking up for me. Could you repeat the question?
Oh, yeah. Can being an adult survivor of childhood ALL impact the risk of developing cataracts or other vision problems?
So what I would say is that don't forget that everyone in this world is going to have cataract, not only because of the cancer or the treatment or the steroids or diabetes. Everyone is like getting gray. Some people will develop cataract earlier in life than other people. So I would say that it may not increase the risk, or it might, but at the end of the day, we all need an ophthalmic exam, mainly when there were treatments like the ones that we're talking today, maybe once a year, once every other year. So increasing risk, I'm not sure about that, probably yes, but as I said, we all need these eye exams routinely, once a year, once every other year. What it's important to emphasize here is there are some kind of symptoms. I'm not talking about the most common ones, but there are some sudden symptoms, mainly with immunotherapy, like unusual symptoms like flashes of light or unusual changes in vision. And you go to the ophthalmologist and you're receiving the treatment, you go to the ophthalmologist, everything seems to be normal. Sometimes, it depends on the treatment, on the type of cancer, et cetera. Sometimes we need to tell the patient to come back in 24, 48 hours because the exam can be normal and can change after 24 or 48 hours. That's something that I should say during the presentation, but I'm saying that because of the question.
Great, thank you so much, Dr. Materin. Question here for Dr. Yeager. How can limiting screen time impact eye strain / discomfort? Do you have any tips for those who work on computers all day?
Yes, that's a great question. We are all on our screens all day long, and screens lead to increased eye strain and eye dryness and can lead to irritation. And one of the main reasons for that is when we look at screens, we actually don't blink as much. And when we blink, it lubricates our eyes and keeps them moist. And so one of the biggest tips that I give my patients is the 20 rule. If you are on the computer for 20 minutes, then you take 20 seconds and you look away and blink about 20 times. And if you do that every 20 minutes and just look away and blink, it's taking these little micro breaks in your work, and it will help lubricate the eye and just keep things in a better place. The other thing is artificial tears. Artificial tears are great. You buy them over the counter. I say keep one by your desk, by your computer, keep one in your car, by your toothbrush, and that way they're always around. And if you can use the lubricating drops while you're on your screen, it can be quite effective. So those are my main tips. And then as Dr. Marr mentioned during his talk, just keeping the eyelashes clean. So in the shower, using soap and cleaning the eyes and making sure that the eyelashes are clean, that will help decrease symptoms as basic maintenance. But there's no avoiding screens these days, and it's just doing those little pearls to help manage the irritation and eye strain.
Thank you so much, Dr. Yeager, for that. And thank you to the participant for that extremely relevant question for today. And we have a question here for Dr. Marr. I needed glasses before my cancer diagnosis of prostate cancer, but my vision seems to be deteriorating too fast. I've had chemo, radiation to body and head, and 6 doses of Pluvicto. Could it be side effects from treatment or just aging?
Unknown in a way, but there is a way to kind of find out. So different things during treatment, especially during radiation, can affect the vision, and that can be long-term. It can be further down the road after surviving cancer and is living to see some of the side effects of some of the treatments. So the best way to go about it is, number one, is to try to get your glasses, or if you need glasses, evaluated to see if that improves the vision. Number two, if that doesn't, to see if there's any physical thing that's wrong with the surface of the eye or something with the lens, like a cataract or corneal condition. And if that's not the issue, then move further back and to check to see how the optic nerve and the retina is. And if those are in good shape, then you have to check the brain and make sure that the brain and the pathway of the vision going to the brain is okay. And so that's kind of the systematic way of looking in to get the answer and then addressing that. And it may be simple as getting a pair of glasses. You know, all of our eyes do age, and age can affect vision. But usually, even in the oldest individuals, over 100 can still have 20/20 vision and good vision. So, you know, you have to find out the cause, and then you can work to see what you can do to help it.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Marr.
Okay.
Question here for Dr. Materin. Just about, do you have any suggestions on finding an oncology ophthalmologist near me? Where would be the best place to start for researching?
Well, that's a very common question, and even we have this conversation with our colleagues that sometimes patients do not have access to an ocular oncologist. I think the best way to look for we live in the internet area that, you know, nobody can hide and everyone can be found. And I remember during my previous job, you know, people used to drive 5 hours or 4 hours. So I think it depends on the condition, because many of the symptoms that we are discussing today can be handled by a comprehensive eye doctor or a retina specialist. And when that is not a possibility, then yes, maybe traveling will be the answer to that. But I would say that most of the side effects we're talking today can be handled by a general ophthalmologist. But the difference is that ocular oncologists, we have a straight line conversation with the oncologist, and that helps a lot. And we see these very often, unlike other specialists. But when it comes to dry eye, cataract, glaucoma, even retinal detachment, the local specialist can handle that or should be able to handle that until it becomes a problem.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Materin. And a question here for Dr. Marr. With so many lubricant eye drops, what are some of the best eye drops in the market that you recommend?
So a lot of people ask me that, and I say the ones that you'll use frequently, because that's the real answer. But there are a lot of different companies and a lot of different consistencies, and they range from very watery drops to very kind of viscous or oily drops. And it, you know, the downsides of the oily ones is they can affect the vision a little bit, but they last longer. And the downsides of the watery ones is they don't blur your vision as much, but they maybe evaporate quicker. I would pick a good brand that's like Sustain, Genteel, Refresh, Theratears. It's not really what brand it is. It's how you use them. Use them, before, like I said before, before you have the symptoms, prophylactically. You know, if you're going to get your chemo treatment, maybe put a bunch of drops in that day to kind of flush out any chemo that gets concentrated in your tears. Or, you know, if you know you're going to be on the computer, start the drops right before you start and use it like every hour while you're working on the screen. But I kind of refrain a little bit away from some of the generic ones, even though they might be slightly cheaper. Of all the recalls that have been out for drops, I don't think any of the brand names have really been recalled. But some of the generic ones or imitation ones have been. So I just try to keep a well-named brand and use them more than you think you need them.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Marr. I have a question here for Dr. Yeager. I will be undergoing radiation therapy for thyroid cancer soon, and I wanted to know if I should schedule an eye exam before I start treatment.
So, not necessarily. I would, you know, not necessarily. I think it's always good to have an eye exam, and everybody should have one, but I wouldn't delay any treatment for your radiation for it.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Yeager. All right. So now I'm just going to ask each of our speakers to provide about a minute or two takeaway. So first we'll go with Dr. Materin, Dr. Marr, Dr. Yeager, and then Ms. Molfatis. Just for a minute to 2 minute takeaway, we'll start with Dr. Materin.
Yes, I think that my comment will be we came a long way. And when we're talking about side effects, that means that patients live longer. And that's something good that's happening. So, and most of the problems and side effects from the cancer treatment are treatable. So I think we are in a way much better position than in the past. And I think that medicine is improving every day, and we're getting more and more resources to help patients.
Thank you so much, Dr. Nagarin. And then Dr. Marr?
Yes. Take home for me is to communicate. Use your resources that you have, because there's usually a lot of them, and everybody out there has the same goal, is to try to make you healthy and get through these processes as easy as possible. Make sure that you communicate with your oncologist, your medical doctor. Let people know what you're going through, and be open to advice. Those are kind of my take-home things.
Thank you so much, Dr. Marr. Dr. Yeager?
Gosh, I have to echo that. And I think that's because, you know, I'll see patients who feel like they don't want to bother anybody, or they think they should just wait for their follow-up. And as a patient or as a caregiver of a patient, your voice really matters. So it's important to be one's own advocate. So advocate for yourself, advocate for the loved one you're caring for, because as physicians, we're here to help, and we want to help you through this process and do everything we can. And of course, I know that Having a cancer diagnosis and going through this can be very overwhelming and stressful for the patient and the loved ones. So, you know, just take it one day at a time and turn to your team for support.
Thank you so much, Dr. Yeager, in the small fetus.
Yeah, I was similarly feeling the same about the takeaway. Just communicating, whether it is with your medical team or just with others. Maybe it means finding peer matching of someone who else is in a similar situation so that you don't feel alone. I think that a lot of what was said today feels like everything other patients are feeling or caregivers are feeling is normal, but you won't know that if you don't talk about it. So making sure to communicate with others, find the supportive services, access the resources, and definitely just talk with your medical team. But thank you to everyone today. Those were great presentations.
Thank you so much. I just want to take this moment now to thank all of our speakers today. We've had phenomenal presentations. And then I also want to thank our participants. Thank them for asking the questions that they asked in the call today. It's what made this program particularly exceptional because of the questions that were asked and the way that they were answered by our speakers. Now, I do want to say a few words for those of you that did not have your question answered. I would like you to go back to your healthcare team and ask them your questions. Please remember that you've learned a great deal from today's program. We want you to take what you've learned and go back to your treating healthcare team and ask your questions again and again. And then I just want to do a reminder to everybody that it is important to know who to contact on evenings, weekends, and holidays, as oftentimes that's when you need to reach out to them. It's common to know who to reach out to during the day, but also knowing on evenings, weekends, and holidays. And then lastly, I just want to mention that I don't want anyone to leave this workshop feeling as if you are alone, because you are not alone. You have a community of support here at Cancer Care after this presentation. I do appreciate your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all so much again.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.